The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And you're very welcome back to the second hour of the programme. Good morning to you, if you've just tuned in. How are you all keeping out there? Councillor Michael McClafferty contacted us to say we should not have dangerous dogs in the county or even the country. We live in a tourist county and there are children out and about all the time. There have been a number of dog attacks recently. 30 years ago in England, you'd turn on the TV and a child was mauled or attacked by dogs. Rottweilers were the mentioned dog back then. Hi, Greg. People, including myself, have for years said that the agriculture industry and its associate industries are the most powerful entities in this country. They have our own two main government parties in their pockets, and I've texted you before regarding the egregious grant of approximately $75 million every year to millionaires, tax-free. It's disgusting. Yes, indeed. I have received numerous texts over the years along those lines. The RTE investigation was a hard watch. It was horrific. This industry needs more regulation. It is animal abuse. Another caller says, accountability, where does the buck stop? Is the minister going to do the right thing? Another, yes, it is awful what's going on in the horse industry, but can you make that lady aware that not all horse owners disregard horses when they're finished racing? Many race horses that have retired are still being well looked after by their owners. Don't tar everyone with the same brush. I've great faith in the listenership of this programme and the Irish public, generally speaking, especially like when we're talking about animal cruelty, cruelty to horses, dog ownership, for an example. You know, we are obviously talking about... we are talking about the bad guys here, not everybody. And I think the general public are clever enough to be able to distinguish between that. But I can understand why you felt the need to text in. And that's, of course, why I read it. There was a scale to what was uncovered on the RTE Investigates programme, though, that can't be ignored. And as I say, I think most people recognise that we're not talking about everyone here. We all know in this country it's all about who you are as to whether you'll be investigated or not. That's what some people think. A caller says they already had a sham referendum on some of the areas in Ukraine. If people who want to be part of Ukraine have been forced out, you have to have a fair referendum. Russia wants to control Ukraine. Indeed, I want to avert a world war. I want a world for my children and their children to grow up in. I understand the nuances on all of that. I mean, maybe the disputed land, the referenda could be held in years to come with obviously international oversight. Maybe that could form part of the process. I really don't know, but I would just like to hear people talking about solutions rather than 80 countries getting together without Russia or their principal supporters, China, at it. And in Russia, we have Vladimir, we have the President Putin there, you know, outlining what his pathway to peace is. And you know, there is no concerted effort really at the moment to get all of the parties around the one table. So you have, you know, one side making their statements, which obviously are not going to jive with the other side, and then the other side getting together with all its mates and making its statement. How is that preventing this escalating to a point of no return? Greg, great admiration. Oh, by the way, yes, we had Letitia McDade on the show on Friday. And she was talking about the loss of her son, Connor. He passed away in a drowning accident when he was just 4 years of age. And it was 25 years since his passing on Friday, and would be his 30th birthday on August 2nd. And the question was, is really, how do you cope? Everyone copes differently. I got some contacts then from people afterwards. And their response was to the question, how do you cope? They can't cope. It's astonishing, you know, there's so many people out there not able to deal with the grief, going through life, unable to get to a point where time heals or makes it easier for them. For many, many, many people, lots and lots of you moved by Letitia's bravery and her story, a lot, getting an awful lot of help from it as well, but also recognising that there are people who can't move forward at all. And a few of them contacted me and I had a chat with a few of them on social media over the weekend, and hopefully there does come a time where things become a little bit more bearable for them. But just to this comment, Greg, great admiration for Letitia McDade in the way she dealt with her loss of her wee boy. Some people turn very bitter when they lose a child, and that's very understandable too, but it would be easier for them and those around them if they were able, with help, to deal with it like Letitia has. God bless you and your whole family. And a lot of Letitia's moving forward is in meeting up with particularly other mothers that have gone through the same situation. My mother-in-law has been in the emergency department for the past 13 hours. She's 79. There are no beds. She's got nowhere to go. That came in on Friday, I believe. Those stories really do bother me, and we try and highlight it as much as we can. Hi, Greg. It's about time something is done about Letterkenny Hospital, says another listener. It's a disaster. We had our mother sent in yesterday by her doctor in a letter saying urgent. Went in at 4 p.m, had to take her out at 9 p.m, for they said it could be tomorrow before she's seen. Landed at midnight and seen to within 30 minutes and got a comfortable bed, a trolley by 3 a.m. Where is the management at LUH? Sorry, let me read that again, because the bottom line was... The bottom line was cut off. I'll read it in its entirety. Hi, Greg. It's about time something is done about Letterkenny Hospital. It's a disaster. We had our mother sent in yesterday by her doctor and a letter saying urgent. Went in at 4 p.m. and had to take her out at 9 p.m. for they said it could be tomorrow before she'd be seen about getting a bed. We said no way and headed to Sligo. We landed at Sligo University Hospital at midnight and we were seen to within 30 minutes and got a comfortable bed trolley by 3 a.m. That's the text in its entirety there. A little later on, by the way, we have talked about this before, but we're going to try and talk about it in a different way today to try and progress the conversation. And that is the lack of female representation in the council chambers. Now, half of you are women listening to this show, at least half of you. And I really want, even for those of you who don't normally text into radio shows, to text us in to join this conversation. And give me your reasons as to why we only have 3 female councillors out of 37 councillors. A lot of female councillors were put forward. Is it that women are less inclined to vote? Women don't just vote for women. They vote for the person and the issues rather than the person's gender. And we, you know, more votable characters than that are males than are females. Do you think, you know, parties need to do more? I just want it to be slightly more nuanced and see if we can sort of get to a position whereby we can move forward on it. Because as I say, half the population are women, and we're nowhere near that level of representation in the local authority. So, and we are lagging. We are laggards compared to sort of the national scene or other counties. So please get involved in that conversation. Let me know what you think. And we'll see if we can come up with some sort of a consensus. Right, we are going to take a very quick break. Okay, you're welcome back to the programme. I just seen Oisin there at the window. And maybe some of you missed the draw for the next round of the quarterfinals, effectively the quarterfinal prelims. The draw was made this morning. For those of you who missed it, Mayo will play Derry, Louth will play Cork, Tyrone will play Roscommon, Galway will play Monaghan. We don't know who Donegal will play yet. I presume that's another draw down the line, but we've already played Tyrone twice. Do we want to play them again? How's that going to be sorted? Anyway, we'll chat to Brendan Devaney a little later on as well, just to find out, can we play Tyrone for a third time? Or is that avoided once you get past the prelim quarterfinals? Right, let's get back to the issue of how we treat horses in this country. Martin, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
Thanks very much for joining us. Right, you've kind of got a... Do you have an inside track on our treatment of horses? Do you work in this industry?
No, I used to work in a slaughterhouse, uh-huh. But it wasn't horses that we were dealing with, it was cattle. Now, I did say to the person I was speaking to, I think it was Shannon, that that was more on the cattle side, and it was to do with, I would say, a contaminated food going into normal food groups.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll just give you a proper rundown of a normal day that this practice still goes on to this day. So you'd have 2 vets in, say, the slaughter hall. So if there's any meat at all that's contaminated, they would spray it with green ink, and it goes down a, what you would call a category green or category C shit, and it's not for human consumption.
Talk about contaminated, what does that mean, Martin?
So, for example, say if the animal had cancer, or say if the person that was taken out the stomach and the stomach burst, and so there'd be feces on the meat itself, so then it would be classified then as category C, not fit for human consumption.
Right.
So that's okay. So Erring was doing a category C shoot, and so at the end of the day then, once all the vets are gone, then the contaminated food group goes back up onto the normal kill area, and then all the green ink then is taken off it, and that's put back onto normal food consumption.
I would presume that there's much more money in the category, I don't know, what's the, is it A, B and C, is it? But I presume category C meat, I presume category C meat is worth much less than the other meat that can go into the food chain, the human food chain.
No, category C has to be destroyed because it's not fit for human consumption or it's not even fit for pet food.
Right.
So it has to be destroyed.
Understood.
So, as I said, then it goes back up again, the ink is taken off and it's put back onto. Now, I done a full detailed report on this in 2015. I sent it off to the Department of Agriculture. I sent it off to the two main customers of.
Yeah, well, we'll not go into, we can't go into anything specific at all, but go ahead, yep.
But I did not get a reply from anyone on it.
Were you able to document it in any other way than sort of like, you know, a witness statement, if you know what I mean, Martin? Were you able to video any of it, or?
I took photographs. It was a full detailed report on everything. Took photographs. And yet, never heard, no reply. And thus practice still goes on to this day.
Wow. So, and the main thing we're talking about here is meat where there could have been contamination with a broken stomach or bowel, or the cow was deemed to have cancer. That would go into lane C effectively to be destroyed. That would happen in the eyesight of the vet, sorry, in terms of it going down a different chute, so to speak. But you're saying
yes,
that would then be returned to the same production line, the green ink washed off.
Yes, that's cut off there.
And you don't believe, you're saying that this, you don't think this is a very isolated sort of situation?
No, it's widespread because I've worked in three different slaughterhouses within the same group, not going to mention the group, but yes, they all do the same thing.
All right, Martin, listen, thanks for that, an eye-opener. That's Martin there with his eyewitness situation. Right, let's move back to some of your comments here. On dangerous dogs, 100% responsibility would be placed on the owner for any injuries or death. We would soon see muzzles on dangerous dogs then, as it would be in the dog owner's best interest. But I mean, like, we have laws in this country. It's about adhering to the laws, isn't it? I mean, there are very specific laws about so-called dangerous dogs. They're called dangerous dogs because they're on a list of specific breeds in terms of the strength of the leash, the length of the leash, whether or not they should be muzzled in public. You know, that law is already there. So if that was being enforced, would we need to get to the next step here that this listener's talking of? I had an incident with a loose pug dog on Saturday afternoon in the Glencar area while out walking my cockapoo when this pug attacked him, targeting his ear. I lifted my dog up into my arms, in which the pug jumped up on my legs, leaving me with a few bruises. It was a scary experience. A very kind girl passing by in her car witnessed the attack and stopped with us, checking we were okay. Owners have to be more responsible for these dogs. I've left a voicemail with the dog warden. Hi, Greg. Sorry to hear about the dog attack on that poor man in Inishowen. Owners need to take responsibility for their dogs. It is a serious problem in Drumbo Woods, Stranorlar, where people take their dogs for a walk and let them run on ahead of them without any consideration for others, especially children and adults with a fear of dogs. Total joke. I don't know how to phrase this. Listen, I understand most dog owners are responsible, but I don't think dog owners know that we don't really want to be around their dogs when they're not under control, and we certainly don't want to be around certain breeds when they're not wearing muzzles. I don't know how that penny's going to drop. And they love their dogs, and they get quite offensive if you were to point it out. But go to any beach where dogs are not supposed to be off their leash today, and you'll see dogs running around, and you drive down with your kid or whatever, and you turn around and go out again because you just don't want the hassle. If a crash occurs that the road authority could prevent, then the road authority could be held liable. Likewise, if a dog attack occurs that the dog owner could prevent, perhaps the dog owner could be held liable. Well, I mean, Just to be clear, generally speaking, there are instant fines that can be laid on a dog owner if they're not under control or not muzzled if they should be. But also too, and this is why we have to be careful with what we say, a criminal investigation can be launched and arrests can be made and prosecutions can follow. So there are laws there. It's not just that, you know, your dog can bite someone. And I'm speaking generally, not about a specific case here, that your dog can bite someone and you're completely insulated. You can't point at the dog and say, hey, it was him, not me. Do you know what I mean? There are certain consequences potentially for dog owners. What is the annual salary for a county councillor these days, including expenses? I think it's around about 40k if you're on a few committees and what have you. Hi, just wondering, does anyone know who I would contact in relation to the pedestrian crossing at Aura Letterkenny, or is it a pedestrian crossing as most of the cars don't even stop? That comes in from Tracy. Tracy, we've discussed this before, and I don't use that road very much, but not surprisingly, I did use it quite a bit. I did use it quite a bit in the lead up to the elections, and I was overtaken, and I was bibbed at, and I had my lights flashed. As far as I'm concerned, that's a pedestrian crossing. That's how I view it. I could be wrong. It's got the flashing lights. It's black and white. The pedestrian would seemingly, if it's safe to do so, have the right of way there. But it's not seen like that. As I said, me trying to respect it, I was honked and hollered at. There are loose sheep at Quigley's Point near the new cycle lane. Be careful if you're out and about. Last one, just before a break, Primetime Investigates mentioned as a good reason to justify paying a TV licence. Going forward in the era of AI, you would wonder about the credibility of a programme relying heavily on video footage from hidden cameras. This programme cost us 15 minutes when it falsely accused Father Kevin Reynolds of fathering a child during missionary work in Africa, ignoring all offers of paternity DNA tests pre-broadcast. All right, I take your point. And just to mention, by the way, in case it doesn't get covered elsewhere, we talk quite a bit about the nature restoration law and the ins and outs and pros and cons of it. Well, it is law now because it has been approved by EU member states this morning in Luxembourg. That's the last hurdle it had to leap before becoming law across all member states, including us here. Six countries voted against it, but not Ireland. We voted in favour of it. So the Nature Restoration Law is now, in fact, law. Right, let's get back to local matters, though that is a local matter as well. Details have shown that 61 people had to wait longer than 1 hour for an ambulance to arrive between July and December of 2023. That's according to newly released figures from the National Ambulance Service under the Freedom of Information Act and was reported by the Irish Mail on Sunday. Yesterday, Councillor Jay McMonagall is a member of the Health Regional Forum. What's your reaction to these figures, Councillor? Good morning to you, Jerry, by the way.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning to all the listeners as well. Yeah, look, it's not news to me, I have to say, unfortunately, because this is something that's been getting raised at the Regional Health Forum for quite some time now, right across the CLT area, along the western coastline, Donegal down to Galway. And there has been concerns raised about the response times by almost every county. And it's from this latest report that when you have 850 suicidal injured patients having to wait for more than an hour, then that's worrying. And it's something that we need to look at and drill down into.
Well, the first question I would have is, yeah, exactly. So Donegal, 61 cases, Sligo, 4. You know, so what's Sligo doing that we're not doing? You know, a simple analysis there might give us some indication.
Yeah, and that's what we were pointing out during the debates and the discussions we had around it about how different areas were responding in better ways. And again, geography has a part to play in this, but it's not entirely about geography. And if it is entirely about geography, then what we need to do is recruit more ambulance service personnel and put more units out there in the periphery of the county, and not just to have ambulance bases in the main towns or in the county. And this, again, is something we have raised as regards Donegal for quite a while. And in recent last 12 months, we've had more ambulances put into Buncrana and Inishowen and also in Stranorder to try and address those concerns that have been raised. And as we know, the long time it takes to respond to a call.
Yeah, and I suppose we need to probably drill into the figures a little bit longer, a bit more as well, because apparently the ambulance service said they had been close to meeting their targets for responding to so-called purple and red calls. So that's where there's a life-threatening illness or injury, you know, the likes of road traffic collisions or what have you, or if someone's having a heart attack. Now, they haven't met them all, but it's closer to that. So I'm not sure what the category then of patient is that witnessed these delays of over an hour, but because we know every second counts.
Yeah, and every second does count. And the other issue that we have is obviously ambulances being docked at their King University Hospital. The turnaround times, that the knock-on effect to 7, 8, 9, 10 ambulances at times being queued up, awaiting to debus patients into the emergency department up there, is causing untold issues and problems and response times. We're having to go outside the county end to bring ambulances in to respond to calls. But the other thing which I noticed in the report was that the calls were some calls were identified as a low acuity call, which wouldn't be that serious, and they could maybe have a bit of time before they could respond if there was a more serious case in the meantime. But I would just worry about that, because then they were upgraded to a higher acuity category. And I'm wondering, you know, what has happened there? Is there a job of work to be done there, and how we grade calls when they come in? You know, or, you know, if someone is in serious need of an ambulance, is an emergency, surely an ambulance should be dispatched straight away. But then if we haven't got the ambulance crews, if we haven't got the services, and I know we've just recently, now there have been 9 more ambulance service personnel coming on board in the next month or two, and that'd be very much welcome. And hopefully that will increase the crews that will be available at any given time. But my understanding, and I think that there's only 12 crews available at any given day in Letterkenny or in Donegal. And, you know, is that sufficient? And we have argued it's not for quite a while.
But also, it's how we respond, because, you know, I presume we're using a national model that's employed in Dublin and Galway and all other places. You know, is it fit for purpose here, the way we sort of cover instances? You know, I mean, we have the cases, don't we, of ambulances having to travel from Killybegs to the Twin Towns, or even from Carrick and Shannon to Letterkenny in the past. You know, is that system, this national model that seems to be employed, is it fit for purpose given the geographical nature of our county, but also the pressures on the hospital?
Not in Donegal, it's not. And again, we've argued that, because if you go down the country, you know, go over by Louth and Drogheda around there, I mean, they have motorways running through the spine of them areas where ambulances can be deployed from nearby towns and be there in a very quick time by up the motorway and into the town that way. We don't have that in Donegal. Mm-hmm. We have a massive county. It's geographically spread out. It's very sparse. There's people living in every corner of it. And what we try to do to meet that is probably like some Buncrana, Carndonna, you know, Donegal Town, Killybegs, Letterkenny, Stranorder, to try and meet the whatever may arise. But unfortunately, it's not enough at times. And we need, what we do need is more ambulance crews, more ambulance personnel. And in fairness to the service, they realise that, and they are recruiting on an ongoing basis. And if anybody has an inkling for that type of work, I would recommend that they should give it a go, you know.
It doesn't help when we're spending many millions of euro on new road infrastructure that actually hinders the movement of ambulances. But that's maybe a conversation that's well rehearsed at this stage. For now, Councillor Jerry McMonagle, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Greg.
All right, take care of yourself. He's a member of the Health Regional Forum. At the weekend, the question was posed on social media: how do we get more women into politics? Last weekend, 37 councillors were elected to represent the people of Donegal and the County Council. Just 3 of the 37 are women. Councillor Gary Doherty asked, why is this? He said, I'm very proud that in Sinn Féin we had 7 female candidates, and of course we have Marilyn MacDonald and Michelle O'Neill in position as leaders of our party, and we have a fantastic new young councillor in Dakota McMenamin. But going forward, it isn't good enough that our council is not representative of the population of our county. Half of the county is women, of course, but 8% of the councillors are women, and on it goes. But, you know, we keep highlighting the issue. Can we find any solution or dig a little bit deeper into this? We have three guests with us. I'm going to say good morning first to my studio guest, Rebecca McDade. She ran for Ain't Do. Good morning to Rebecca.
Morning, Greg.
How are you getting on?
Doing okay.
Right, okay. You've had a week now to post-election, I suppose, to digest the experience. How would you describe it?
It's a great experience to be able to do it. It's very tiring. It's long. Also, just there's nothing in here, Greg, just to let you know.
That's all right.
Is it meant to?
Yes. What about now?
No.
Nothing? I'll get to that in a second.
I can take them off if you
want. Because I want you to hear all the two guests. Keep them on for a second and I'll sort that out. What was the experience like?
It was brilliant. Even being out canvassing and knocking on doors, people were actually, they were happy that you actually come to the door and knock on the door and waiting for the responses.
How's the headphones now?
How's the headphones?
A little bit better.
Do you want it louder?
There's a little bit of feedback there.
Is there? That's because they're too loud.
Well, I don't know. My ears weren't great over the weekend, so I'm only coming around to myself now.
As long as you can hear me, we're all right, yeah. But any negatives to the experience?
Not really, Greg, It's time consuming. So I had to rely on my mother-in-law to get my washing done, to look about the children, to be at home and be there for them. So you do have that responsibility where you're going to be out every day. I still try to keep my work going as well. So you have to plan. You have to really plan. And to be honest with you, I suppose you'd need to be canvassing a lot earlier than when I would have started. Now, like when you get into the nitty gritty of what maybe, what keeps women back, you have health issues, you have the caring in the home, regardless of whether it's your children, whether it's
how fellas can
elderly.
It's
a wee bit different, Greg, because the woman's
different?
Always there to back them up. They can always get away. They can always get to do the things they need to do because they have to do it. But the woman always has to think about everything else.
That was a bit cheeky.
I know
it
was, but I saw the smile, so I knew what you were doing.
I knew fine, rightly. Yeah, I know.
But like
it's just life, isn't it?
It's just life. And we do take on that extra role where we want our work, but we also have the home, regardless of who's at home that has to be cared for.
I think chatting to either Caroline or Shannon, you said, I would never expect anyone to vote for me just because I'm a woman. Why not?
No, because I believe in the right person for the job. And yes, it's brilliant.
But does your approach as a woman to all issues, should that not give you an advantage in levelling the playing field? Should that not be a reason enough for women or fellas to say, right, actually, you know what, I'm actually going to vote for this person because they are a woman.
I've had that at the door. Yeah. I've had people say to me, women especially, will say to me, I'm voting for you because you're a woman, end off. And yes, it's lovely to hear that. But I want them to know a wee bit more about me.
Yeah,
I want them to know
that,
who they're voting for, and I want them to understand what I'm about so that they know why they're voting for me, put it that way.
Yeah, stay with us and jump in and out of the conversation as you like. Joy Beard is a councillor with the 100% Redress Party. Again, congratulations to you, Joy, and to Golden Minimums with us as well. Both of you, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Greg.
Right, Joy, what was your experience like? In the canvas, because I think some of these situations are slightly different because you were going there. I know you're not on one issue candidate, right? But you were in sort of the epicentre of this defective concrete crisis with a very strong message in relation to that. And I'm not sure gender even comes into it in any way, shape or form. But I want your view on it. It doesn't matter what I think.
Yeah, well, I think, going round the doors canvassing, as Rebecca said, it's a big, big task you're taking on. It is time consuming and very tiring. But mostly I found it was emotionally draining. You were speaking to people, every evening, every weekend, they were coming with you with their problems and the issues that they had. And I did find that I'd have brought that home. And, that's just my nature. That I found was emotionally draining as well as the physical draining. You're out every night, you're committing so much time to canvassing, to getting yourself out there. I did find that was hard to deal with, to be honest. Just as Rebecca said, you've got your everyday lives as well, and then you're hitting the canvassing trail. So it can be particularly tiring, I have to say, and emotionally draining.
And this is before you even officially take your seat in the council. I mean,
yes,
what will life look like for you? Will you be able to keep all the balls in the air? Are you confident?
Oh yeah, very much so, Greg. I intend to give this my all. This will be, you know, one of my main priorities now. The people have voted me in to be their voice. I've been an avid campaigner anyway in relation to the defective concrete crisis, you know, so it does take up a considerable amount of my time already, but this is just an extra, you know, being involved in the council and being that voice is really important to me, to be honest. So, no, I'll make it work, trust me.
No, I've no doubt. Was gender an issue for many people on the doorstep? Like, where they said, oh, right, she's a woman canvasser.
Yeah, I think people were surprised a few occasions. Now, I did have one occasion, you know, my husband would have went canvassing with me, Greg. And, you know, there's one occasion he always stays well back, you know, at the gate or whatever, just to be there in the background while I introduce myself to people. But there was a few people sort of said to me, why is he not coming and speaking to us? Why isn't he coming up and speaking to us, you know? Because, and I had to emphasize, look, I'm the candidate. And that really, really did surprise them. And in turn, that really surprised me that they didn't even think a woman should be running for council elections, you know? But there was that perception that it is a male-dominated, you know, politics is male-dominated in general. So as I say, they were surprised to see a woman on the doorstep, I think a lot of people, to be honest.
And Dakota, your experience as well. Again, it's not unique, but it's going to be very different from a lot of the candidates I've spoken to over the years. Because you're a recently new mum, which gives you a great insight into not only just a young person's but a young mum's attitude to everything as well. But you still had to balance all of that and put in a campaign.
Yeah, so there definitely was a lot of balance not going on. My daughter, she's 1.5 or so. It's all quite new to me, everything. But now I relied a lot on my mum and she helped me out a lot with the babysitting and stuff. But yeah, going around the doors now, it was a good experience. I have to say, I didn't get too much negativity. I got a few kind of about my age and kind of, you know, some people at the doors not realising that it's actually me canvassing. They're kind of like, oh, who is she? And I'd have to be like, well, it's me, you know. But and they were quite taken back then when they seen me and they kind of realized that how young I was. But it was all quite good. And it's definitely difficult for a woman to put themselves out there because you are putting yourself out for a lot of abuse as well. And there's definitely aspects of that as well. And you're putting yourself out for scrutiny, like people commenting on my age and, you know, oh, sure, what would she know? And, you know, comments like that. But you get rounded and look, the people voted too, and it was great to see that there is 3 women in the council. It's disappointing that there's not more, but at the end of the day, that's what happened. That's how the people voted.
And was it a learning curve for you as well? And I don't want to focus on your age, but you know, we mix in our circles, and we have interactions with different people of all different generations and what have you. But I'm just wondering, was it a learning process for you, sort of knocking on the doors and engaging people with those issues, an experience within which you grew yourself as well?
So the last about 5 years or so, like, I first got involved properly in politics with Sinn Féin, it was in 2019, and that was for Matt Carthy to the EU, and that's kind of started down in Kildare kind of area. So I had a lot of experience of being on the doors knocking, but it was a lot different now whenever you were asking them to vote for you and put their trust in you. And you know, kind of people did kind of think, well, like, she's but only young. But I did get a lot of quite good responses about my age too. Like, a lot of people were delighted to see that somebody young was entering the game.
And just in terms of who answered the door, I think it's often maybe going to be, you know, mum or dad that opens the door. Like, did any teens or younger people come to the door after, or, you know what I mean? Like, I'm just wondering how did you engage with maybe, you know, people more, you know, in your peer group that you would like to see come out and vote?
Yeah, so there definitely was a lot of the older people at the doors, but some of the youth did come out, and it was more about getting them on the register than anything else, because a lot of them were kind of like, oh, I'm not registered, I don't know about this and all. But they were interested in it, but they just didn't seem to know how to go about it. So it was good kind of engaging with them and kind of telling them, right, well, you need to vote by a certain, or you need to get registered by a certain date and all that.
And Dakota, when you talk about, you know, negativity, was there much of it? And when we talk about negativity, was it sort of more comments about your age or your experience, or did it run any deeper than that? Not that that's not bad, but...
It didn't really run much deeper than that. It was more so my age, you know, well, what will she do? Like, she's only young and, you know, she'll not be fit for all them ones in the council and all that. But no, it didn't.
That's what you
much.
Said about the very first woman that was elected to the council, and she wasn't long proving she wasn't long proving them wrong. Yes, indeed. Okay, maybe we need to brush up on our history. Any negativity for you, Rebecca?
No, I had one person who just said that, you know, for the party it wasn't for them.
Yeah, well, that's fine, isn't it? That's democracy,
which is perfectly fine. And I just said, look, that's okay. I did ask, well, what was the reason for it? And they just said, don't want to talk about it. And that was it. So, but I do think that, you know, yes, Dakota is young, but when I think back on me and whenever I started my business, I was only 19. When I bought my premises, I was only 22. I think if you have a determination that you want to do something, you're going to do it at all cost, and you're going to get there.
Mm.
Because if it's something that you really want to do, you're going to be there.
I think, though, the issue isn't it, like, say you've got a fellow with that ambition at 19, mm. and you've got a woman with that ambition at 19, not just in politics but in life, both can achieve perhaps what the other can. It's the hurdles and the attitudes that you have to have perhaps extra strength to overcome.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You probably maybe had to work much harder than a fella might have to achieve your goals.
Mm. And I would have had people coming into the salon because I was a hairdresser. So I did have people coming into the salon. Can I ask them, can I speak to the manager? And I'm like, yeah, I'm here. You know, so they weren't expecting that either. So, and it was the same at the door. You know, they were saying you're much younger looking in person. So it's good to get that feedback, you know. So there was always a laugh and a giggle at the door.
Mm.
That always got, you know, it kind of broke the ice and made things just a little bit easier.
You can make it work in your favour.
Yeah, because you can relate to people that wee bit more, you know.
Yeah. Look, I don't know why people vote or what motivates them, but I think we did have, you know, again, some really, really strong female candidates. I feel that things have gone backwards since 2019, if you know what I mean. I don't know what you
what
think, Rebecca.
What I found, Greg, was you've two... Now I understand it. You have the party vote or you have a personal vote. And with local elections, as I see it, it's my own opinion. People did say to me, look, I have a local man or there's somebody that I have voted for forever, more or less. So they will have my number one, but I will definitely give you a number two. So there's I did have a lot of transfers. I know that. I just didn't get the opportunity to utilise them.
Mm.
But it gives you an understanding as to where people lie with the person and may not just be their party policy. So the people who got in have the support behind them from the people because of the work that they've done. We have had people tell us that there's people who haven't worked for them, that they weren't happy. But at the same time, overall, then the people who got elected, it's the voters voted them in. So they obviously still hold a certain amount of respect with a lot of people, and you can't change that.
Yeah, Joy, I think most people would agree that 3 out of 37 is, you know, it's a strange kind of a number there. Do we need to actively do something? Have you given any consideration as to what can be done? Because Rebecca's quite right. People vote on people's records as well. And if the same people keep running, it's going to be quite difficult to displace them. And it would be anti-democratic to try and displace them just to let someone through. So what do you think the future is, or how might we see more of a balance there in the council?
Yeah, well, I'd like to think now people will see once we get into the council and start making things happen and start being a voice. That people will see that and maybe become even more interested in politics in general. And that's where it starts from. There has to be a starting point. We had 19 women candidates in this election who stood, but only 3 were elected. I think that's something that has to be looked at. The electorate did not vote all the female candidates in. That to me is quite concerning, to be honest. I know Rebecca said people have voted her because she's a woman, you know, but there's clearly an element there who just decide not to vote for women, you know, no matter all, you know, what they represent or about their personalities, because it's very much to do with that and what work they do in the community. So as I say, even though we have our 3 elected, there was 19 candidates that ran as women, which I think we have to remember. And if we compare our statistics to like South Dublin have, there's 40 councillors and they've got 19 women in South Dublin That's 47.5% of that council makeup is of women, whereas we only have 8%. So I don't know if it's a rural community thing or whether, you know, that plays into the equation. But I do have to just, while I'm on, commend the See Her Elected team. I don't know if any of the other ladies were involved with the See Her Elected, but that's the first. If you are interested in politics, reach out to them because the workshops they provide are amazing.
Dakota, too, and I think what is a barrier, and of course, you know, Joy quite rightly mentioned 19 candidates. Some maybe were sweepers in terms of, you know, strategy and what have you, right? I don't know if all were put forward as, you know, let's get this candidate elected. I'm sure parties would tell you that, but if you look at it, it looks a little bit different. But I just wonder if there were more in the field. Like, we've had excellent councillors, female councillors in this county, and excellent fellow councillors, right? They're doing their job as well. But they've just either they've packed it in or not sought re-election for their own reasons. But generally speaking, you would speak to them sometimes around the country and they would tell you that trying to balance family life and the work of the council and the way the council is structured, the amount of time that you have to give to meetings or what have you, then you have stuff to do in the evening, Dakota. You know, that's going to be a challenge for you. I still think that, especially whether people like it or not, women are often the principal carers, that we need to restructure local politics that you can have a better work-life balance.
Yeah, definitely. Like, there shouldn't be that barrier of choosing between whether you want to be a mother and have children or go into a field like politics. So something that I'd actually spoke to with Tony McDade about was childcare facilities and creches. That was something he had brought to the council before, and you know, something like that that could help women a lot more, like when meetings are going on, to have them creche facilities would be brilliant step forward for encouraging more women. And like, we have gender quotas, but at the same time, I can't agree with just gender quotas for the sake of it. I think the person who, like, can't just put up a female candidate for the sake of having a female candidate, needs to be someone who's obviously interested in politics and, you know, is wants to work for politics and for the community. But it definitely is, it will be challenging, and it's a challenge I'm looking forward to, definitely. And there's a lot to juggle, but I think it is doable, and that's what I'm kind of here to put forward, is that it can be done. And yeah, hopefully I can encourage more women to go into politics and more younger people too, just in general.
Yeah, I think,
and just to add to that, you know, see, working from home now, because when I did the Politics Plus course, the next chapter, that was back in 2019, I think. When I did that, we talked about all of the different barriers that stop women from going into council, so and running for elections, and like, there's so many different things from health, the carer side, the financial side of it, and it doesn't come with a job description. Like every other job vacancy you apply for, it comes with a job description. You know exactly what's expected of you. That's not the case with the council seat.
Mm.
So I think that maybe if they even, from that perspective, if they did do a list of a job description, that people would know exactly what's expected of them. You know, how many meetings are there in a year? What time is expected of you for those type of things? What type of meetings do you need to go to? What maybe committees? Because I know that you have to try and get onto committees. So you need to get that type of information together and let the people know this is what's expected of you. Then you have your other work outside of that. But being the online now and your remote working and working from home and being able to do calls with you online rather than having to come in. I had to because my husband's working from home, so I don't want to cut on his internet, so that's why it was easier for me to come in here.
Stop
so
him.
And I have the freedom to come in and out as well. Okay. That I'm able to do that.
I get
so
you. I of all the conversations I have here, I think one of the biggest things we could do is to make it a more family friendly working environment, Joy. I don't know what you think about this finally, so that people don't feel they have to make a decision at a certain period of life when they can. And that would encourage more candidates, different types of candidates, both men and women, don't get me wrong, because, you know, they because it's very onerous. People might criticise councillors, but it takes a ton of time, and it's very hard to juggle a regular life, in inverted commas, and this life. And I think at local authority level, Joy, it shouldn't be like that. And I think more people would get involved if it was a better balance of life and work.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like, I'm delighted that the meetings can be conducted via Zoom. It means, you know, you're not traveling a distance to go to the meeting and traveling back. So that impacts your daily, you know, life when these meetings are taking place. So that definitely is a big plus that you are able to do that. You know, it takes out that traveling element as well. So you can have more time doing other things that you do need to do. Because this is a very vital role that we've taken on, me and Dakota. You know, the people are relying on us, you know, and like, I'm sure Dakota's the same as myself. We're here to give it our all. The people have voted us in to be their voice, and that's what we intend to do. So we need to use our time in the most productive way. So as I say, being in a Zoom meeting is an easy way to work around that. You know,
all right. That's just one of the things. Joy, thank you very much indeed. Best of luck with your 5 years. Take care of yourself. Dakota, lovely to speak to you again. Take care. Thank you very much indeed. And Rebecca, unlucky. It was a great campaign. You got close, but maybe next time.
And good luck to the two girls and the three there. Neve Kennedy's on as well, isn't she?
See, this is the thing. We could have been talking about two because Neve herself thought for quite some time.
Best luck to the both of them.
That she might miss out. Okay, lovely stuff. Thank you very much indeed. Back with more after these.